From the LifeWord Studios, this is Life Perspectives with Michael Goring.
Joining me today is comedian, ventriloquist, and one of my personally favorite people in all the world, Taylor Mason. Taylor, good to see you, my friend.
Michael, it's a pleasure to see you, I guess, virtually now. I don't even know what you call this now that we're together in this weird chat room, right?
Yeah.
We can see one another. I mean, God bless you, bro. Thank you very much for having me on. It's just amazing, the technology. And we were talking a little bit off the air here before we started, because I've got all these, I must have 10 different platforms that I can go to, including the one we're using here today, that for these, but each one has its own parameters and logistics for sight, and especially for sound. And it is just an unbelievable, and as a ventriloquist, of course, I'm really tied into sound. And can you hear, and is everything being enunciated, and is it, but you know what it really comes down to, Michael? The title of this program is Perspectives, I believe, correct?
Life Perspectives. Yep.
And you know what? We're talking about that right now. It's all about how you approach it and what your perspective is. And I'm glad to be on, so thanks for having me on your program.
Thanks for being with us. So Taylor, your career has spanned decades, from winning Star Search to performing worldwide. How has your faith shaped your career path over the years, particularly in such a diverse industry?
Okay, so I get asked this a lot, and my answer is so simple, but it is profound, and I didn't come up with it. This is not a Taylor Mason original.
Okay.
It's really four words, and it sums up everything. And you've seen me work live video.
Yeah.
God works through people.
Yeah.
So it's so easy to say that, and it's frankly, as a preacher, I mean, you know, I'm being so redundant. I mean, you know, I can almost see you rolling your eyes. No kidding. But it is so profound. God works through people. And if you just boil everything down to the essence, why are you on earth? What are you doing? You know, if you're listening, and I'm talking to Michael, what is going on? It's very simple. Here's what's going on. God is working through people. And that perspective has influenced my life beyond those four words. And I try to make everything, as I work in my world, it's all really all about comedy. And so again, I'm just to break everything. And Michael, forgive me, if you were to sum up Taylor Mason the same way that I just summed up my perspective on faith, the way I would sum up Taylor Mason is this. Who is Taylor Mason? He's one of those people, it takes him 30 minutes to say hello. So that is the perspective you need to enter the entire next few minutes as I'm talking. That perspective of God working through people permeates my life. That means it permeated the outlook that I had in high school. It permeated my life as I went to college, as I went to graduate school, as I was given an incredible blessing of choosing my profession, which is as odd and weird and off the grid profession you can choose, which is ventriloquism.
Yeah.
But which is really all about communication, and God is working through people. And so why am I here? Why have I been doing this, as you said, for all these years? Because my ego, although it's, you know, bigger than the planet, is somewhat punctured by the fact that I'm really just here as a vessel. God is working through me, and wherever I go, whatever I'm doing, I don't have to think about it because it's part of my life.
Yeah. So I first heard about you through our friend Bill Gaither. Mm. And I've heard you share this story before, but for those maybe tuning in tonight that they've never heard of Taylor Mason, they don't know anything about you, kind of a pivotal moment in your career, at least in terms of from the Christian perspective of your career, was a chance encounter with Bill Gaither. Would you share that story, how that all came about, and what God did in that interaction with Bill Gaither?
So to start, Bill Gaither's maybe the best boss I've ever had. I toured with the Gaither Homecoming Artists, who are just these incredible musicians and ministers of the Lord. And boy, do they know their Bible. If you're going to go on that tour, I'm just telling you, just, you know, at least peruse the Bible, yeah. You know, Old Testament, New Testament, just do that. I'm just telling you so that you are in the ballpark. Best boss I ever had. And here's the only reason I met Bill is because there was a minister down in Florida named Mike Williams, and I was working at a comedy club in Birmingham, Alabama called the Stardome, which I worked just recently. I just played there recently, and it's just this spectacular room right downtown, actually Hoover, Alabama. We're just outside of the city of Birmingham. It's like 500 seats, and it's state of the art. Yeah. Mike Williams, a preacher, came. And at the time, this will date me, I was selling VHS videotapes. And Mike bought one of the videotapes of me and sent it, because it was the first time he had ever been in a comedy club. And this was in the late 90s.
Yeah.
He had never been in a comedy club where there was no vulgarity. It was just me for an hour and a half. And my act is basically, what's the difference between Captain Crunch and Frankenberry? You know, my act is mom, dad, the kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, my savior, ventriloquism, audience participation, which is God working through people. So Mike sees this and sends the videotape to another minister named Ken Davis in Nashville, Tennessee. Ken is another man of the Lord. And Davis looks at the video once. It's 90 minutes of me, sends it to Bill Gaither. And Bill Gaither sees the video and decides to book me at his homecoming event in just outside his hometown. He lives in Alexandria, Indiana.
Yeah.
This was in Indianapolis. And what he did was he said, you can come on and do 10, 15 minutes. And Ken Davis says to me, well, you got to do something unforgettable. So this is what I did. I made a puppet that looked just like Bill Gaither. So this giant Bill Gaither lookalike. Okay. And Bill Gaither is known for being an incredible songwriter along with his wife. But also, he has a stutter, which comes out at the worst times of a performance or one of his services, at the most emotionally, the peak, Gaither will start stuttering, which I've always found to be hilarious.
Yes.
So I thought, well, this would be great, because what I'm going to do is I'm not going to do the puppet myself. God is going to work through people. So my prayer before every program, especially this one, is, Lord, please just let this work the way I hope it will. So I go on. It's like 20,000 people in this basketball arena. And I bring this unwitting woman from the first row up on stage and sit her on a stool. And I bring out the Gaither lookalike puppet. And I give it to her. This woman, I believe she was a nurse. She's never worked with a puppet in her life. Now she's on this big screen TV in front of 20,000 people, and she has Bill Gaither sitting on her lap, and I have her put her hand inside the puppet head so that she, this person from the audience who has no idea what's happening, is now operating the puppet's mouth, and I am putting the words in Bill's mouth, which is obviously, you can just tell from my telling the story, it's impossible.
Yeah.
And of course it's stuttering. We can't, you know, and I think one of the punchlines was, Bill, you know, I say to the puppet, can we sing a song now? And the puppet looks at me and says, did I write it? And, you know, everybody starts laughing, and I say, no. And then he says, oh, so that's the one I didn't write. And, you know, everybody's laughing really hard. And I don't know what song we sang. Anyway, we can't get through the song.
Yeah.
Because the puppet is stuttering. The poor woman doesn't know how to puppet, so it's swiveling its head around as if it's, you know, having a psychotic episode and opening and closing its mouth in inopportune times, and I'm trying to fit the words in, and it's just peals of laughter, and I get high. I mean, I walked off that stage right after I did my 15 minutes, and then I'm driving on family vacation. Our kids at the time were little. My wife has booked us in Vermont at Smuggler's Notch. You know, family vacation, play tennis, go kayaking.
Yeah.
Paul, this is in the old days of the cell phones with the antenna. you know, and the phone rings in the car, and it's Bill Gaither's office, and they offered me the tour. And right there, as we're driving, you know, kids are singing in the back seat. My wife is telling me to get off this exit. And I said on the phone, yes, I'll do it. And I signed up and I did 3 years with Bill.
That's incredible. Carnegie Hall, the Sydney Opera House, incredible venues. And,
yes.
And that really launched you, introduced you to a whole new audience and doing churches and.
Okay. So let's talk about that, Mike.
Yeah.
Okay. So So I went to a Presbyterian church with Reverend Burton. This was a long time ago. I'm an old man. This is back when there was kind of a, and this might even be before your time, bro. There was kind of a hippie Jesus movement.
Sure.
Okay. And Reverend Burton at the Presbyterian Church in Clarendon Hills was pretty much like a poster boy for, you know, I mean, he would wear sandals. And it was great. And he had this old 1938 Packard convertible that he kept in immaculate shape. And when he would drive to the Bible camp, he would pack like eight of us illegally. and he's blasting, you know, Christians, you know, songs on the radio. And he was a great guy. So, all right. I love telling the story. I'm about 11 or 12. I'm in the bathroom at the Presbyterian Church in the basement. Reverend Burton and my father come into the bathroom. They don't know I'm there. And Reverend Burton, this is right after vacation Bible camp. And I'm like seventh grade, going to seventh grade. And I hear Reverend Burton talk to my father. And the Reverend says to my dad, my father, Bill Mason, Bill, Taylor is a handful. And I hear my dad say, I know he is. He's a handful, but he's got a good heart. And Reverend Burton says to my father, Bill, we were talking about the Bible at vacation Bible camp. And I'm telling you that heart to heart, as a friend and as a minister, don't have Taylor read Ecclesiastes right now. So what do? I wait till those two leave. I'm like, I'm sweating. I'm so excited. You know, I rush out of the bathroom. I run upstairs into the sanctuary. Go right, you know, behind those, the pews, their Bibles in the pews. I grab a Bible, sit down. You know, I can hear my father. Where's Taylor? Taylor. And, you know, I'm flipping through the pages, Ecclesiastes. So that like opened my, because at the time I was being picked on by these three. I was, you know, working as a ventriloquist when you're in seventh grade was just, oh man. Pastor, it was not a good time. I was being made fun of. And, you know, So I'll tell this story. Okay. Because it's, so these three guys, I won't name them, Dean, Greg, and Keith. Oh, believe me. So they're at the bus stop in Clarendon Hills and going to seventh grade. And I have been working. I'm a closet ventriloquist until now. I'm going to break out. I've read Ecclesiastes. Nothing matters. Go for it. You know, all is lost anyway. So why not just give everything, find something, you know, and go for it. So I've taken that to heart, bro. So I've got a ventriloquist puppet in a nylon bag. And first day of school, seventh grade, I get to the bus stop. There's Greg and Dean and Keith. What's in the bag? And I say, I'm going to be a ventriloquist and I've got my act in the bag and I'm going to do it in homeroom. They say, no, you're not. You're doing it on the bus for all of us. Okay, I say, yeah, I'm an idiot. Yeah. So back by the emergency exit, they have me pull this my puppet named Ted out. And oh my gosh. And the joke, my first joke, Pastor, was I say to the puppet, you know what? Because the puppet is saying mean things to me. And I say to it, if you were my kid, I'd give you poison. And the puppet says back to me, if I were your kid, I'd take it. That was one of my first jokes. And I'm being heckled by my friends and keep. Okay, now listen to this, man. This is so great. So I'm miserable now. I go to the bus stop every day. Just miserable. And my dad doesn't know what to do because I'm miserable. And he calls Reverend Burton. And Reverend Burton, pastor, who's going to help this fat little kid? And Reverend Burton says, call the football coach and have him talk to Taylor, you know, about sticking up for himself. So. Yeah. The football coach, Gene Strode, comes to our house and I'm just a big baby, spoiled. You know, my parents are just lovely. And so they come in, I'm miserable. And Coach Strode comes in, what's your problem? I'm being picked on. And he says, well, you know what? I was in eighth grade now. He says, "What at the end of the summer in August, why don't you come out for football?" I would never go out for football. I would never hit anybody. I say, and Coach Strode says, "You'll be wearing a helmet and pads. The coaches will help you. It's not really like hitting people. You're just being aggressive."
Really?
Yeah. So I'm a freshman. Practice. I've never played. I'm not an athlete at all, Pastor. I'm not. I mean, my father knew nothing about football. This is great. Keith, remember Keith from the bus stop? He's on the sophomore team. They've got the freshmen scrimmaging the sophomores. I'm playing guard. And there's Keith playing defensive end. And he no longer looks like a bully to me. He's wearing these ill-fitting pads. He's a sophomore. He's kind of tall, but the cleats don't fit right. The thigh pads are too low. The shoulder pads, the helmet. He no longer looks like a bully from the bus stop. Bruh, he looked like a target. So I can't wait, you know, to level this kid. And I mean, I've never done anything like this in my life. It's totally a God thing. So we're on some kind of pulling trap play, if you know football. And I'm playing guard. And my assignment is to block Keith. I don't block him. It's like a magnet being attracted to a big piece of steel. I just drill him, you know. And he goes down. And I remember going, it didn't feel like I did anything. He went down. It was like a pillow. You know, poof, he goes down. And I get up. And nobody's like patting me on the back. It was just like, you know, the play happened. I knocked this kid down. Keith walks off and quits. Just walks off the field and quits. And for the rest of my sophomore year at Hinsdale Central, Keith, Dean, and Greg, every time they saw me in the hallway, they would just, as a group, turn, like of a hive mind, they would just turn and walk away. And it was like, you know, I mean, I prayed. I can't say, please let those guys not pick on me anymore. That was basically my prayer. I don't want to be picked on. I'm crying. Well, my life, all of a sudden, now I'm a football player. It's like I had gone from this fat little cheese ball with a puppet. And now I'm like, the coaches called me a headhunter. I didn't even know what that meant. A headhunter? I don't know. All I know is Keith was picking on me. And the coach said I could block him. And I laid him out. And everything changed. And I ended up playing college football. It's at the University of Illinois. Which
that's
is
incredible. A whole other- yeah, that's incredible. So I didn't ask you before we came on. You don't, by chance, have any friends with you, do you?
I do not. You know what? But I'm sorry, I don't have.
No, that's okay. I thought I would ask. You know,
I have all these imaginary friends, and I had this is wild. So I was in Florida this last weekend, actually at a church, and a man came up to me at the end of my program. I performed Baptist Church in Sunset City, very nice. And a man comes up to me and says, "Sir, those puppets are scary." And immediately, what? You know, what? He says, "Those puppets." And I said, "Well, you're going to have to explain. What do you mean they were scary?" And he goes, "Your pig puppet. It was sitting at the edge of the stage staring at me." So now what do you say?
Yeah.
So I say, "Well, yeah, if you were trying to have a stare down with my puppet, you're not going to win because his eyes don't close."
Yeah.
And the guy goes, "Well, I had a real problem with that." So what do you say? I said, "Well, did he wink at you? Was there like some kind of communication that I don't know about?" "No," he said, "they were just scary. Your puppets are scary." And this is where I took the initiative. I said, and this is another thing. Before I do my program, my prayer is just, if nothing else, you know, my Lord, let this be fun for everybody. If it can't be fun, let it be entertaining for everybody. If it can't be fun or entertaining, let it be informative. So now we're at the point now of information. So I said, "These are not puppets, sir. These are my imaginary friends, and they have all come to life just for this past 90 minutes. So they are imaginary friends. It's what you call Facebook, or maybe, you know, I don't know, Twitter or whatever it is that you use. I don't really care, but think of it that way." And the man, to his credit, as if I had enlightened him in some way. Of course, I've got a better story for you, buddy, that harkens back to Gaither. I love, this is my favorite puppet stories ever. I have a pig puppet in my act named Paco. Paco's a favorite. I used to sell the Paco puppet at the Gaither concerts. And here's what's weird about that. I made more money per head of imaginary pig than my family made in the real thing. Okay, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're in Denver, Colorado at the Pepsi Center, the home court at the time for the Denver Nuggets NBA team.
Yeah.
And now the Avalanche. Okay, so, and I do my set, about 15 minutes, and Paco, the pig, speaks fluent Spanish. Solo soy encerdito que le tiene mucho miedo este año. The weird thing about that is I do not speak Spanish at all. I don't know one word of Spanish, but the puppet, the pig, is fluent. So we do our set. I'm like, show's over. And I would go to during the Gaither run, 3 years, I would do my little segment. And then I would run upstairs. Well, a lot of times at the arenas, there's a gym for the athletes. And I would get to use that. We're there. Or I would run up to the top of the arena where the boxes are for the, you know, for the high rollers or the corporations who bought a box.
Yeah.
And you would watch, and I'd watch the program because the Gaither program was amazing. 20,000 seaters. They had the Diamond Vision screens so that everybody, they did close up. So it was fun, and it's a service. It's not really so much a performance as it is about a 4-hour service of music and faith, and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And I would go up and enjoy that. And I would meet the general manager of the arena. So I do the thing, and Paco the pig, you know, donde esa fiesta, como, you know, he does his whole thing in Spanish, and I am backstage getting ready to run up, and the producer of the Gaither tour, Dina, comes over to me and says, "The general manager of the arena needs to see you right now," and I'm, you know, thank you, Jesus, this is a prayer answered. I'm letting God work through me, and now this GM of this arena may not even be Christian. Awesome. Let's go. And she said, "Good, this elevator. I know where to go." I go up, and within 30 seconds, I have found the GM's office. I walk in, and I'm just, you know, thank you, Lord, right? I walk in, and right away, I realize I have misjudged the situation. This is great. There's a woman, just very conservatively, long skirt and flats and a winter jacket, and standing next to her is a gentleman wearing a winter coat, and he has like a bolo tie on. He hasn't zipped it up. Nice couple, and I'm guessing Hispanic or Latin, just from the way they look. Yeah. And then the GM comes over to me, and I know him right away. We've never met, but I know the look because I've been to a lot of these arenas, and he says, "We have a problem." That's the first thing he says to me. "We have a problem."
Not good.
And I'm, you know, oh Lord. So, you know, I'm thinking, I'll just say a quick prayer and I'll get through this. And no time for that. He says, "This lady heard you say something that was really awful." And I look at the couple, and she says, "I heard you say in Spanish that Mexican people are pigs." And I'm just heartbroken right away. And I'm thinking, what did Paco say? Usually he says in Spanish, "I'm scared of all these people. They're going to eat me. A lot of these people are planning a barbecue and they think that I'm going to be," and that's the kind of stuff he's saying.
Yeah.
And my father was the football in the Denver Broncos game and they dropped him and stuff like that, all in Spanish.
Yeah.
And I'm racking my brain. When did I say Spanish people were pigs? And I don't know what to do. And it's silent. Ben Spear, one of the singers with
legendary vocalist for the Spear family.
Oh, they're going to love this. He walks in unannounced, bursts into the room. He's diminutive, right? He's not a big man at all.
Yeah.
5'6".
Yeah.
He walks in. "What's the problem here?" And it's a prayer answer, man. God works through people. So I explain, you know, I try to explain, and the general manager says, no, this is what happened. This lady heard the pig say all Mexican people are pigs. And we need an apology. And right away, I say, I'm so sorry. Ben says, "I don't think you understand what's going on here." Silence in the room. Ben says, looking right at the lady, he goes, "Look, you've misjudged this entire process. The pig speaks Spanish, but he's not Spanish. He's not Mexican. The pig is Chinese. The pig is the smartest thing on the entire tour. He often tutors many of the children on tour, tutor in math, and he does it all." Now, the general manager and the husband of this woman are laughing, and I'm staring at Ben Spear. "What are you doing?" He says to the lady, "Look, whatever you might have heard, you have to understand the pig is Chinese. He speaks four languages. Now, and he's just going through this whole thing. Sometimes he'll mix up languages. So whatever you might have heard, I guarantee you the pig would never say that Mexican people are pigs. That's not who he is. That's not it's if I'm not there. You know, and now he's holding the pig in front of a lady. You know, he's like, this pig has never been mean to anyone in his entire life. And he turns the pig to look at him, and Spears holding it. Did you say that Mexican people are pigs? And he has the pig shake his head no. And he says, look, this is going to come down to he said, she said. And he goes, I'm going to side with the pig. So listen. So I'm sorry. So the man, the husband of this woman, he's now laughing. And he pats me, Michael, he pats me on the back. And then he walks out. And then Ben Spear goes with him. And the two of them are now outside the office. They're talking. And now it's me, the general manager, and the woman, and she is staring daggers at her husband, who's now outside. And she's like motioning him to come back in. And he waves to her and starts walking down the hallway at this arena. I mean, if you've ever been to one of these big arenas, yeah. There's hallways. And he's like disappearing down the hall. So now she doesn't know what to do. So she storms out, opens the door, storms out after him. Spear looks at me and winks, looks at his watch. Oh, like, oh no, I'm on. And I see him sprint down the steps. And he had to be in his 60s.
Yeah.
He's sprinting down the steps from the top level of the Pepsi Arena in Denver so that he could make, because you don't want to be,
you don't want to be late.
Well, yeah, Bill.
Yeah.
Will never get mad, but there will be other, he'll make fun of you in front of 20.
Yeah.
Spear. And the general manager looks at me now and goes, nice to meet you. Great job. Shakes my hand. Done. So Spear literally, like I said a few minutes ago, God works through people. Amen, brother.
That's incredible. So looking back on what you do, your role, what do you think your career looks like as it evolves over the next 5 to 10 years? How does your faith continue to shape the direction that you're going to take in performances and projects?
Okay, every program, and it doesn't matter where I work, and this goes for in a church, corporate gigs. I'm trying to think how I can capture that. We had big family dinner here at the holidays. I love Christmas. My wife's got family from all over the world. My wife's Brazilian. So we're having probably 10 people here Thanksgiving dinner. And my wife says to me, this was her cousin Carol, her husband Fernando, their daughter Natalie. He's from Peru. My wife is Brazilian. And my wife says, you know, their background is different than mine. And she said, don't you ruin Thanksgiving dinner. There's like 10 people that don't you ruin it with one of your jokes. So first thing I do in front of 10 people Thanksgiving dinner, I bring up politics. Now you're saying, why would you do that? I'll tell you why. It meant there were 5 people I didn't have to buy Christmas gifts for this year. Okay, all right. So now that did not really happen. Why would I do that to you? And here's why. My job, the way I see it is, it's a never-ending process.
Yeah.
Of finding something fun, funny, and humorous. It's not going to hurt anybody. That is not, I may have mentioned the word politics, but I don't take a side. I don't want you to feel bad about what your life is about, what your faith is. I don't want you to feel bad about who you are. What am I doing? God is working through people. And if you see my show, to really nail the answer to your question, Pastor, the last, say, 10 to 15 minutes of my program is similar to the story I told about the woman with Bill Gaither puppet. I bring audience members unwittingly on stage. Now, they have not worked in comedy or with puppets, 99% of them, in any way in their life. Now, in front of a comedy club or a casino or a corporate gig or a church or a synagogue, wherever the Lord has put me, my job is to bring these people, diverse backgrounds, different ages, walks of life, various, you know, faith for people who are the Christian faith. I mean, everybody has their own relationship with Jesus Christ, which I don't get into doctrine. My only thing is, and I hate to harp on it, is God works through people.
Yeah.
Comedy is not easy. And I think it gets harder and harder to just genuinely get laughter. And what I do is I give 3 to 5 people their own puppet, Paco the pig still speaking Spanish, you know, a penguin, a boy puppet named Romeo, and then a mask that used to be the genie from Aladdin, and the automaton out at Disneyland, and broke. And I took a plunger from a toilet and built a mask that fits a human being's face. And then I operate this plunger so it looks as if the human has now become a puppet. And I put my voice, whatever voice I want, into this person, usually a man. And so there's four or five people, each with a puppet, one of them with a mask on their face. And then we sing a song. And I can choose. It could be Jingle Bells. It could be Row, 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 but whatever. Obviously, it never works. I'm putting my voice into everybody's puppet as they make the mouth work, including the gentleman with the mask on his face that makes him a new giant puppet. And I can do anything I want. And so what I'm doing is I'm creating a comedy scene for, you know, for what I think is a long period of time for a comedian.
Yes.
10 minutes is as a preacher. Lord knows, you know, as a preacher, 10 minutes is an eternity. That's an eternity in our world to keep everybody's attention, be funny, be entertaining, be informative. One of those three things, Lord, please. You know what I mean? Every prayer, that's the prayer. Funny, entertaining, informative in my hour and a half, including this last 10 to 15 minutes with these different people on stage who I've never met.
Yeah.
But I'm going to allow myself, working as a vessel of the Lord, I'm spreading joy, doing what I do, sharing my gift through these people, i.e. God works through people. I know that's just so redundant. How many times can he say it? I don't know. Because I think there are people who go to church who don't really sincerely believe that.
Yeah.
There are people who don't get that nugget of truth. Why are we here? We're here because God works through people. That is really, and if you don't believe that, and that's okay. I'm not saying, you know, I'm going to beat you over the head if you don't believe it. I'm just going to tell you, to me, that is what I'm supposed to do, what we're supposed to do. And I try to do that in a professional capacity as a ventriloquist.
Yeah. Yeah. And you do a great job. And, you know, the your clean comedy, it's family oriented. And I just am thankful for your friendship over the last few years. What a blessing you are to me and to my family. And I appreciate you taking time today, Taylor, to visit and to share your story. To learn more about Taylor Mason, I want to invite you to visit taylormason.com.
Yes.
See his tour schedule and go and
I don't post my tour schedule anymore because I've had people get crazy, man. I mean, you know, I've just stopped to now. I post one on social media,
but
on my website, I just stopped because because my audience is very diverse. It's not just people of faith.
Yeah.
And man, when there's some clashes in the parking lot, I prayed on this. Lord said, don't post your schedule. Take that right away.
So if you want to see a schedule, social media.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
All right. But taylormason.com is the website. And I'm Michael Goring. This has been Life Perspectives. Thanks for watching.
God bless you. Thanks, buddy.